Rapid fire. Centennial. At our best, American Legion celebrates its legacy with a Tournament of Roses parade float. Long after his 5.5-mile, 2-hour ride on the American Legion's Tournament of Roses parade float on New Year's Day ended, American Legion National Commander Brett Rystad couldn't stop smiling. "It was a rush," Rystad said. "You couldn't have had a better, more supportive crowd out there. I don't think there's anything I've ever done that compares to this level of excitement." An estimated 700,000 people attended the parade, while another 4 million tuned in on ABC, NBC, Hallmark Channel, Univision, RFD-TV, or KTLA. "I really think it gave us some fantastic exposure," Rystad said. "People were very supportive as we passed. A lot of God bless the USA and thank you for your service. And there were Legion family members along the way, yelling out their post numbers. It was great." With the theme, Still Serving America, the American Legion float highlighted the entire Legion family and its various youth programs as part of the organization's centennial celebration. Participants arrived at their spot in the lineup around 6 a.m. It didn't take long for people walking up and down Orange Grove Boulevard to stop and thank those on the float and ask to get a photo with one or all of the 4 Medal of Honor recipients riding on the Legion's float. Once the parade began, those lining the parade route, packed 3 and 4 and 5 people deep, greeted those on the float with cries of thanks, applause, and salutes. Those reactions moved Walter Joe Marm, who joined fellow Medal of Honor recipients Herschel Woody Williams, Ron Rosser, and Britt Slabinski on the float. "It's very humbling," Marm said. "It's an honor to be here representing the veterans of our country. It's very special." For Sons of the American Legion National Adjutant Anthony Wright, the float ride was an opportunity to honor his grandfather's and father's military, as well as put a spotlight on the Legion family. "To have the American Legion Auxiliary, the Sons of the American Legion, and the American Legion Riders shows unity and that we're one group," Wright said. American Legion past National Commander Dan Dellinger assisted with decorating the float and watched the parade from the viewing stands. "I was sitting across the aisle from a 2-star Marine general, and he stood up and clapped when the float passed," Dellinger said. "Everyone gave a warm welcome to us. I think people around this country saw us at our best. 100 years of serving America, and we're going to continue to do so." Stephen B. Brooks. Caption: Volunteers prepare the American Legion's Tournament of Roses parade float in Irwindale, California, on December 31st. End of caption. Honor and Remembrance. Legion takes Blandensburg Memorial Fight to Supreme Court. Alvergia Hobbs Guyton fondly recalls a playmate she never met, her Uncle John. Growing up with only brothers for siblings, Guyton would gather her toys, gaze up at a mounted picture of John Henry Seaburn in his Army uniform, and talk to her uncle. Seaburn, a 20-year-old Army private, was killed 5 weeks before the end of World War I in France. He is among the 49 World War I soldiers whose names are enshrined on the Blandensburg World War I Veterans Memorial in Maryland. To preserve their memories, the American Legion is defending the memorial at the U.S. Supreme Court, with arguments scheduled for February 27th. Represented by the First Liberty Institute and Jones Day, the Legion is asking the court to reverse a court of appeals ruling that could lead to the bulldozing of the memorial. A ruling is expected by July 1st. In 1925, the American Legion and Gold Star Mothers erected the memorial to honor 49 Prince George's County men killed in the Great War. It stood unopposed until 2014, when the American Humanist Association filed suit claiming the cross-shaped memorial violated the First Amendment. The Gold Star Mothers selected a cross design to represent their son's resting place in Europe. Seaburn's remains were repatriated for internment at Arlington National Cemetery in 1921. Decades later, Guyton and her husband, retired Army Colonel James Guyton, were stationed overseas, and she surprised her mother, Gladys Hobbs, by taking her to Marne, France, where her brother was originally buried. Guyton says the Hobbs family is proud that a local American Legion post was named for Seaburn. Post 140 in College Park was formed in 1938 and disbanded in 1991. For years, its members helped conduct ceremonies at the memorial. Leonard Smith, the first black commander for Prince George's County, led Veterans Day and Memorial Day services there. Those were the main events each year in Prince George's County, says Smith, who served as commander of the Seaburn Post four times. It was one of the highlights of my Legion career. Smith adds that he was disappointed when Post 140 had to close its doors. He now belongs to Post 275 in Glen Arden. The Guytons are thankful for the Legion's defense of the Blandensburg Memorial. The American Legion since 1919 has had a mission, says James, a member of Post 68 in Sandy Spring, Maryland. If you would read that mission and look at what they were doing during World War I and compare it to 2019, it has only gotten stronger. Guyton is hopeful that the Supreme Court will rule in the memorial's favor. These men went into the service and gave their lives for America, she says. If they take away the memorial, how does the next generation know the history? Henry Howard. Read more about John Seaburn, American Legion Post 140, and the Blandensburg Memorial. Legion.org/honor. Caption: The fate of the Blandensburg World War I Veterans Memorial hinges on a Supreme Court ruling. End of caption. Government. California Eyes Text Tax. The California Public Utilities Commission, CPUC, has proposed a tax on text messages, USA Today reports. It's not clear how the CPUC plans to reap tax dollars from California's texters. Does the sender pay? Does the receiver pay? Asks Kim Wunderman, president and CEO of the Bay Area Council, a pro-business group. What if you move out of state but you keep the California number? What if you drive down to Reno, Nevada, and get a phone? Can you avoid the charge then? There are also questions about what exactly defines a text. Certain kinds of phones and certain kinds of messaging services may not be able to be captured by California's proposed text tax plan. We hope that the CPUC recognizes that taxing text messages is bad for consumers, Jamie Hastings of CTIA, a wireless trade group, said in a statement. Taxing this service would burden those who rely on and use this service each and every day. Legion Baseball. Baseball Hall of Fame to host Legion Centennial Event. The National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum in Cooperstown, New York, will host an American Legion Centennial Event for the public, March 29th to 30th. With 81 former American Legion baseball players enshrined in the Hall of Fame, including numerous military veterans, the National Baseball Hall of Fame and the American Legion have shared a long relationship. The weekend's festivities in Cooperstown will include an exhibit with memorabilia from the first century of the Legion and American Legion baseball, as well as an event with guest speakers. Tickets to the Baseball Hall of Fame are available at the door and cost $25 for adults, with discounts for seniors 65 and older, children 7 to 12, and military veterans. Museum members, active and retired career military, and children 6 and younger are free. For more information, visit legion.org/baseball or call 1-888-425-5633. Memoriam. Last survivor of Dorchester sinking passes. William G. Bunkelman, last survivor of the USAT Dorchester, the World War II transport ship made famous by four Army chaplains who gave up their life jackets and sacrificed their own lives so that others might live, has died. He was 98. Although Bunkelman never considered himself a hero, he helped save the lives of more than 50 men as their doomed ship sank in the icy Atlantic. The Monroe, Michigan News reports, of the 904 people aboard Dorchester, the paper adds, only 230 were saved. It was the worst single loss of American personnel by any American convoy during World War II. Bunkelman pulled 54 men from the water after Dorchester was torpedoed. But he was always quick to call others hero, especially the four chaplains. In his official U.S. Army written account of the event, the News explains, he wrote about seeing the chaplains, without regard for their safety, going about the deck giving men encouragement and trying to calm their fears. The chaplains, known as the Immortal Chaplains, were Lieutenant George L. Fox, Methodist, Lieutenant Alexander D. Good, Jewish, Lieutenant John P. Washington, Roman Catholic, and Lieutenant Clark V. Poling, Dutch Reformed. As the Four Chaplains Memorial Foundation describes, the four chaplains spread out among the soldiers, tried to calm the frightened, tended the wounded, and guided the disoriented toward safety. The chaplains opened a storage locker and began distributing life jackets. And when there were no more to hand out, the chaplains removed theirs and gave them to four frightened young men. The chaplains died together as the ship slipped beneath the frigid waters between Newfoundland and Greenland. Survivors in nearby rafts could see the four chaplains, arms linked and braced against the slanting deck, according to the Foundation's account. Their voices could also be heard offering prayers. One survivor described the chaplains' actions in their final moments as "the finest thing I have seen or hope to see this side of heaven." Memoriam. Longtime Americanism chairman passes away. Joseph E. Cowett, 89, who served 18 years as chairman of the American Legion's Americanism Commission and then chairman emeritus, died December 24th. A Marine Corps veteran of the Korean War, Cowett was a 68-year member of American Legion Martel Roberge Post 47 in Rollinsford, New Hampshire, where he held almost every position at the post and district level. He served as the Department of New Hampshire commander from 1979 to 1980, National Vice Commander from 1989 to 1990, and as a member of the National Executive Committee from 1987 to 1989. As part of the Department of New Hampshire's Oratorical Committee, Cowett helped start the first junior oratorical contest there. He was also instrumental in strengthening the American Legion baseball program in New Hampshire and at the national level. Joe Cowett exemplified what it means to be a member of the American Legion, community, state, and nation, National Commander Brett Reistat said. He will be remembered in our organization as a leader, innovator, and force for patriotic values. Along with his dedication to the American Legion, Cowett served his community as postmaster of the Rollinsford and Summersworth post offices, town moderator, town selectman, and zoning board commissioner. He was a lifelong member of St. Mary's Parish in Rollinsford, where he was a lector, Eucharistic minister, member of the Pastoral Council, and chairman of the parish's 150th Anniversary Committee. Richard Anderson, chairman of the Americanism Commission, said Cowett's passing leaves a void not only on the commission and at every level of the American Legion, but in the hearts of all who associated with him. Through his unwavering commitment to 100% Americanism, Cowett influenced the lives of countless youth and adults of this great nation, Anderson added. Joe's many years of leadership and guidance as our chairman has set a standard that serves as an inspiration for us to strive to enhance and promote the many aspects that the Americanism Commission has been taxed with over our 100 years of service to God and country. Capitol Hill. Freeloading or frugal? It's estimated that as many as 100 members of Congress live in their D.C. offices, McClatchy reports. My constituents want me to do the job they elected me to do, says Representative Andy Barr, Republican, Kentucky. They appreciate frugality, too, and appreciate the fact I'm focused on doing my job and not moving into Washington. However, there are efforts to end the practice. Representative Cedric Richmond, Democrat, Louisiana, describes the practice as nasty and contends that it's akin to freeloading. Free janitorial, free cable, free security, free utilities. Ain't a bad deal, is it? Says Representative Benny Thompson, Democrat, Mississippi, a member of the Congressional Black Caucus. The reality is, you're gaming the system. McClatchy reports that the final decision on whether House offices can be used for apartment living will be determined by the Committee on House Administration. Representative Zoe Lofgren, Democrat, California, who chairs the committee, has asked the architect of the Capitol to provide an estimate of the fair market value of living in a congressional office. According to McClatchy, there's a lot of sentiment that that is not something that should be permitted, Lofgren observes. Some office-dwelling lawmakers argued that if they weren't allowed to bunk in their workspace, congressional seats would only be occupied by millionaires who could afford to maintain two residences. McClatchy points out, a typical House member earns $174,000 annually. Caption, Representative Mike Quigley, Democrat, Illinois, is one of several congressional members whose offices have doubled as their home away from home. End of caption. Foreign Affairs. The cost of Yemen's civil war. 10,000 new cholera cases each week. 57,000 people killed. 85,000 children younger than five who have starved to death. 14 million people at risk of famine. Foreign Affairs. A shorter work week. There's a growing trend around the world to move toward a four-day work week. As Reuters reports, companies in New Zealand and Germany, the Japanese government, Britain's Labour Party, and Trades Union Congress, and other entities are either experimenting with a shortened work week or calling for policy changes to bring it about. The companies that have adopted a four-day week, or just 32 hours or labor, report lower stress levels among their staffs. Companies around the world that have cut their work week have found that it leads to higher productivity, more motivated staff, and less burnout, according to Reuters. Reuters adds that a recent survey of 3,000 workers from eight countries, including the United States, reveals that nearly half thought that they could easily finish their tasks in 5 hours a day if they did not have interruptions. 49% of Americans, the highest of any country surveyed, say they work overtime. Crime. Bambi used to punish poacher. A Missouri hunter has been ordered by the court to watch the Disney classic Bambi as part of a sentence for illegal hunting activities, AP reports. The hunter was found guilty of illegally killing hundreds of deer, according to AP. The deer were killed, decapitated, and their bodies left to decompose. Three relatives and another man also were caught in connection to the poaching case. They've paid $51,000 in fines and court costs. The poacher will watch Bambi once a month during his 12-month sentence. National Convention. Color Guards, bands invited to compete in Indianapolis. Bands and Color Guards can apply now to compete at the American Legion's 101st National Convention in Indianapolis in August. In addition, local bands are invited to participate in the convention parade. The National Color Guard contest will be at 4 p.m. August 23rd, an hour earlier than its traditional start time, in Hall A, Level 1 of the Indiana Convention Center. There are four classes of competition: advancing and retiring, military, military open, and open. Units can represent any part of the Legion family or have a combination of members in the unit. Units wanting to compete must commit to marching in the National Convention Parade at 4 p.m. August 25th. Applications are due to National Headquarters by July 19th. National Headquarters and the Department of Indiana are encouraging area bands to enter and participate in the parade, too. These bands may be Legion-sponsored or from local high schools. Each band should have a minimum of 50 participants. The application deadline is July 15th. The National Band Contest will be at 1 p.m. August 24th in Hall A, Level 1 of the Indiana Convention Center. The event includes the Concert Band and Exhibition Concert Band classes. Competing bands must commit to the Sunday parade. Applications are due by May 31st. Legion.org/convention. Fab Four to perform at banquet. A Beatles tribute band will perform at the National Commander's Banquet on August 27th. Billed as the ultimate tribute, the Fab Four tours nationwide and has had concerts air on public television. Tickets to the banquet are $50. Those interested in attending should contact their department adjutant. Membership. New posts. PFC Michael C. Olivieri, Post 2011, Homer Glen, Illinois, chartered December 19th, 16 members. American Veterans Memorial Post 412, Lake Nona, Florida, chartered December 7th, 15 members. Hunt's Veterans Memorial Post 432, St. Gabriel, Louisiana, Chartered December 7th. 16 members. Mile High Post 5280. Denver. Chartered November 7th. 16 members. Post 1919. Marshall, Arkansas. Chartered November 7th. 15 members. Post 28. Alexander, Arkansas. Chartered October 31st. 15 members. Brian L. Bucher. Post 218. Warren, Maine. Chartered October 31st. 23 members. Post 356, Berkeley Heights, New Jersey. Chartered October 30th, 15 members. Centennial Post 2019, Pike Road, Alabama. Chartered October 30th, 37 members. Hart Mack Wilson Post 312, Thompson, Georgia. Chartered October 26th, 34 members. The Great War 100, Honor and Remembrance. So cheer up. Both of us. Editor's note, throughout the Great War's centennial, the American Legion magazine will publish excerpts from the letters of D.B. Bernard Ryan of Albion, New York, who served as an Army infantry officer and helped found American Legion Charette Post 35 in 1919. March 3rd, 1919. This afternoon I went to the secretary of L'École des Hautes Études Sociales, and discussed my course with him. It will begin Wednesday and will include commercial and maritime law, maritime insurance, industrial legislation, lectures on the peace conferences, etc. I will send you the schedule later. I believe that it will be of practical value and that I shall profit by it. I intend to attend some of the conferences at the Sorbonne. My school is part of the University of Paris, but not of Sorbonne University. March 10th, 1919. I am looking forward to the good weather when I shall see Paris under sunshine and with green trees. I can't say that the city is very bright and gay now. It is rather drab and dirty, and where I suppose one saw before the war much color and fine gowns and hats, one sees now everywhere the black crepe of mourning. Nevertheless, there is much activity. The boulevards are filled. The shops seem to be busy, and certainly young and old American is spending his money here. March 27th, 1919. And now we are only 16 days apart, by mail. We won't think about the possibilities of something preventing my going home. The going home schedule of divisions seems to be marching along, but when I read about the 27th parading, and then think that the general may be this very minute walking down Broadway, I surely do get a bit homesick. March 29th, 1919. The Army is up to its old tricks. Instead of leaving us all on our honor as to attendance at school, here it began last week holding roll calls. On top of that comes a ruling that everyone shall do 8 hours academic work daily. So report weekly or report himself for not having done so. I am doing some outside reading, not very much, and am profiting chiefly in progress in French by conversation around the table after meals, as if anybody in any school does 8 hours a day. It is all very droll, but there is still 3 months ahead for something funnier to be thought up. 3 months! Yes, today I have completed 4 weeks here, practically one-fourth of my stay. So cheer up, both of us. Love, Son. My GI Bill. Veterans and Education, by Valerie Hefner. Post 9/11 Benefits and FAFSA. Question. I transferred my post 9/11 GI Bill benefits to my 22-year-old daughter. She said I need to provide her my tax information so she can complete the application for federal student aid, FAFSA. Since my daughter's not living with me and is using my GI Bill benefits, will she need my tax information when completing the FAFSA? Answer. If your daughter can answer yes to any question on the FAFSA, she may not need your tax information. Some of the questions include, is she married? Was she born before January 1st, 1995? Is she a veteran? However, if she answers no to any of the questions, she will need your assistance. If your daughter has special circumstances, she should contact the financial aid office at the school she attends. It is important to complete the FAFSA early, as your daughter may qualify for extra grant money. Valerie Hefner is a Marine Corps veteran and member of American Legion Post 27 in Apache Junction, Arizona. Ask Valerie at legion.org. Centennial, Post 309, Los Angeles. According to its Centennial Celebration page, Sheriff's Star Post 309 is a specialty post dedicated to the men and women who have served their nation honorably and have returned home to serve their local communities within Los Angeles County. The post received its temporary charter in December 1927. The photograph below shows an early incarnation of the American Legion Riders. In this case, a motorized unit of the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department that was the precursor of today's California Highway Patrol. Share your post's legacy. Upload stories, photos, and videos of your American Legion Post's history. Legion.org/centennial. Focus on finances. J.J. Montanaro. Personal finance. USAA, money management in marriage. You're driving down the road, oblivious to any potential danger, and begin to change lanes. There's nothing quite like the adrenaline rush and shock you feel when you nearly avoid a catastrophic crash with a vehicle lurking in your blind spot. Several years ago, my wife and I experienced one of those moments with our family finances. When it happened, we had been married more than 10 years. We had long ago settled into our financial routine, and things were good, or so I thought. Unbeknownst to me, we had a cash management conflict. The blind spot? My wife was frustrated because she didn't feel like she had money she could call her own. Both our paychecks went into a single joint account from which all our expenses were paid. I was happy and thought she was too, but I was wrong. How do you and your spouse manage your money? Is it working? Are you sure? Or could you be blissfully ignorant like I was? As you take a second look at your cash management options, weigh these four approaches. Do everything together. It would seem that using joint accounts indicates a healthy relationship. With this approach, you have a single account that serves as the hub for all your month-to-month finances. Over my 20-plus years in financial planning, this is what I've seen most often. However, as my own experience showed, it's not always the best approach. Your spouse may want the freedom to go on a shopping spree, buy gifts, or just have some fun money that's all her own. Keep some and contribute. Sometimes dual-income couples set up a joint bill-paying account to which they will each contribute a specified amount. The household bills are paid from this account, but they keep the rest of their cash in an individual account. I've noticed this approach has worked well for a number of couples on their second marriage. While they are embarking on a new merger, this approach seems to appeal to couples giving marriage another go. Divide and conquer. Here, you each manage your own accounts and agree on how you'll split the bills. Essentially, each spouse controls his or her own cash, and a strategy is developed to meet joint obligations. This approach provides the maximum amount of individual autonomy, and I've seen it most often in couples that married late. Typically, they were well into their 30s with their own professional lives, financial habits, and obligations they brought to the marriage. The Chief Financial Officer. In some cases, one member of the marital team holds sway over everything. That person's name is on the accounts. He or she pays all the bills and manages the money. I'm not a big fan of this because, in my mind, money management is a team game. However, if this is your chosen approach, it's important to ensure that the non-CFO is involved and understands what's happening on the financial front. As I've learned, there's no right answer to how you manage your money. You've got to find your own sweet spot. Our story had a happy ending. My wife set up her own checking account, and each pay period we automatically transfer $125 from our joint account to her account. This small move paid big dividends. She's content and feels like she has some of her own money. Hand in hand, we continue down the road to financial security. J.J. Montanaro is a certified financial planner with USAA, the American Legion's preferred provider of financial services. Submit questions for him online. legion.org/USAA/focus on finances. Technology. Apple launches online store for troops, vets. Apple has opened the Apple Veterans and Military Store for current U.S. service members, National Guard personnel, reservists, veterans, and close household relatives. As Stars and Stripes reports, the new online store provides a 10% discount for service members and veterans on most products Apple offers online. There are some caveats. It's intended for items for personal use. You must be 18 or older, and there are limits on the number of certain items for purchase. For example, one person can only buy or order for a family member 3 computer systems and 3 iPads in a calendar year. Verification of military service is required at checkout. Apple.com/shop/browse/home/veterans_military. Politics. The floors are going to buckle. David Yepsen, former Des Moines Register political reporter and host of Iowa Public Television's Iowa Press show, on the historic turnout expected by state Democratic officials for next year's presidential caucuses. With a large field of candidates, the party doesn't want a repeat of 2016, when large crowds and changes in voter registration laws revealed a deeply flawed system designed for a different political era, Politico reports.